AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com.
So I initially wrote, looks like the grains are building on yesterday's gains, and for corn and even soybeans, that's true. And then I scrolled down to wheat. Yikes. I think it's probably the Russian news. We'll talk about it more later. This morning, as Pork Week continues, we'll head to the kitchen. Then we'll talk ERP, inflation, and land. So belly up to the table. This AgriTalk is shaping up to be a meaty one. Live from the parade of porcine palaver via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with the meat guy, Minnesota Pork Board's Promoter of the Year, Charlie Torgerson of Charlie T's. Then we'll talk with Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen, later Randy Dickoot from Farmers National Company. And right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. It's you and me today, beloved listener. Davis Michelson here. Thank you so much for tuning in. So pleased and honored to be behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. Mute myself to clear my throat right quick. There you go. Yeah, Davis Michelson here. Chip, still on vacation. He will be out for the rest of the week. But I'm excited about being behind the big green leafy microphone. I'm excited that you've tuned in on your preferred ag radio station or your preferred digital device. Big show this morning. First of all, we're going to have a little bit of fun. Charlie Torgerson of Charlie T's, the meat guy, and the Minnesota Pork Board's Promoter of the Year as Pork Week marches on. We talked about PRRS yesterday. We had Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork swing by to help walk us through that conversation, and it was great. If you're interested in that, lots of issues were highlighted by our guest yesterday, Dr. Lauren Glazinski, who was talking about how some of these diseases are sort of transmitted from one farm to the next and how it's something that maybe the industry needs to tighten up on just a wee bit. It's a good conversation on yesterday's AgriTalk in the morning. But today we're leaning toward what to do with pork. I mean, you bring it to the kitchen, you sort of stand there and look at it and you think, huh, well, that will be delicious. What are we going to do with it? The meat guy, Charlie Torgerson of Charlie T's, is coming up. And then I want to dig into some deeper issues, the ERP, which is the new WIP Plus. Is it the new and improved? I'm not sure. Paul Niefer's got some details to highlight for us there. And I also want to talk to him about the relationship between inflation and the land market. He wrote a piece that was really good about that last month. And then we've got Randy Dickoot to sort of tie it all in, Farmers National Company. I want to talk about seasonality in the land market, some changes that he has highlighted in a recent blog. It's going to be great. And then we've got Karen Bonert coming up. So let's hop into the news here and start with some highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update for the weekend of June 5. Interesting here, corn, 94% planted compares to 92% on the five-year average. 78% emerged, and here we go. We get a condition rating, 73% rated good to excellent. That compares to 72% last year. Corn crop conditions actually 1 percentage point better than the same time last year. Soybeans, 78% planted compares to 79% on average, 56% emerged. Spring wheat, 82% planted, 97% on average there, 55% emerged. Winter wheat, 79% headed, compares to 84% on average. We got 5% harvested there, and that's just 1 point behind the usual, the historical harvested pace of 6%. Cotton is 84% planted, well ahead of average, 11% squaring, 48% rated good to excellent. That's up 4 percentage points from last week in that good to excellent category for cotton. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken accused Russia of exporting hunger beyond Ukraine. This, as the European Council president said the Kremlin was using food supplies as a, quote, stealth missile against developing countries. The Russian envoy left that meeting as he spoke, accusing him of spreading lies. Meanwhile, Russia's defense minister said two Ukrainian ports have been demined and are ready to resume grain shipments. And when I mentioned corn and beans higher and wheat lower, I mean, wheat is down. If we're looking at the winter contracts, your soft red, your July down 28. Currently, July hard red down 31. Even the spring wheat down 11 cents. I wonder if that has something to do with the news that those Ukrainian ports have been demined. This according to Russia's defense minister. Well, Russia banned entry to the country indefinitely to 61 U.S. officials and executives to retaliate for, quote, constantly expanding sanctions against its citizens. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm are on that list. According to AAA, the average national gasoline price climbed to a record of $4.87 per gallon on Monday. Areas in the Midwest saw some of the largest one-week gains. EPA Administrator Michael Regan said the new definition of waters of the U.S. that EPA is writing will be, quote, complementary to an expected ruling from the Supreme Court in a case covering the scope of the Clean Water Act relative to waters and wetlands connected to large navigable bodies of water. Navigable has been one of the key words in the conversation over WOTUS and the Clean Water Act. Leading Republican senators involved in gun talks on Capitol Hill have signaled it's unlikely Congress will raise the age requirement for purchasing semi-automatic firearms from 18 to 21, instead saying they are looking at changing the criminal background check system. The Labor Advisory Committee has urged President Biden to extend former President Trump's China tariffs on approximately $300 billion worth of Chinese goods. And for the first time in 2 months, the Port of Los Angeles and the Port of Long Beach expect inbound container volumes will exceed year-ago levels. All right, let's get over to Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. Karen, good morning. I understand that you've been in the great state of Iowa hanging out with robots. What do you got going there?
Yeah, it was Lely North America's grand opening. It was spectacular. They've invested $24 million to help support their long-term vision. And the CEO told me that they'll continue to grow their capacity to manufacture and grow the demand for automation and technology. Currently, Lely is making 20 milking robots a week in Pella. And obviously, that demand is coming from producers, right? The benefit of adopting technology provides data regarding cow health, milk quality, overall farm management, and really brings insight to the table for the producers. In fact, when I was in Pella, I was able to speak to one Canadian dairy farmer who says that this kind of technology also helped them combat labor issues, as well as advances heard in terms of production and improved health. So yeah, I mean, it just honestly, Davis, it creates a better work environment, lighter workloads, greater flexibility, and improved efficiency. So it's really, really cool. One insight I want to talk about real quick is that I used to see that farms that were under 200 cows had robots. And now we're really seeing a trend with more farms that are between 500 and 2,000 cows with robots. And I think that it's just that the economies of scale kick in, and those herds of those size also see that the herd improvements, are worth looking at. So obviously, majority of the cows are being milked conventionally in this country, but your guess is as good as mine as what percent milking automation will grow in the United States in the next 5 to 10 years.
Outstanding, Karen. It's great to hear something like that. That's helping out the labor force. It's helping out the health and well-being of the cow herd itself. Great stuff, Karen. Have a great day. Thanks for stopping in.
All right, you too. Thank you.
All right, we'll be up with the meat guy, Minnesota Pork Board's Promoter of the Year, Charlie Torgeson, right after these messages here on AgriTalk. It's Davis Michelson. Thanks for joining us. Stick around. AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Hey, before I let this opportunity slip by without Chip being able to respond, this song could only have been written by a 30-year-old man, by the way. My next 30 years. It was by a 42-year-old, it'd be my next 42 years. Obviously. It just seems so clear. I don't know how it could be more clear. Anyway, this is me grandstanding now. I digress. Charlie Torgerson of Charlie T's, the meat guy and Minnesota Pork Board's promoter of the year. Mr. Torgerson, welcome to AgriTalk. Good morning, sir. How's everything in your world?
Obviously, everything is great up here in Minnesota. The pork is freaking beautiful up here and delicious. So I love being up here in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
How are you guys this morning?
Doing great. Doing great. It's great to hear from you. Now, I want to unpack some of this here. I've got three titles here for you, so let's start with Of Charlie T's. What is Charlie T's? What do you got going there?
Well, Charlie T's food started, I opened my first barbecue joint in Fairbanks, Alaska in 1991 called Charlie T's Smokehouse. And so the name kind of stuck with me when I came back and took over the lead executive chef for Famous Days for 20 years, and everybody started calling me Charlie T. down there. So when I left Famous Dave's in 2016, I started a consulting business and it started kind of more of a food business, but turned more into a consulting business. But I still sell some rib rubs and barbecue sauce, mainly all the food service, my own products. So Charlie T's Foods is that, but it's mainly consulting. Obviously I do a lot of stuff with Minnesota pork, Iowa pork, Missouri pork. I'm also a contractor for National Pork Board. I handle their whole food service side. So I work for the pork producers to move more pork on menus in big chain restaurants and small mom and pops too. So that's kind of what Charlie T's Foods is. Go ahead.
You are a legit bona fide authority on barbecue. There's a lot of debate around the Midwest. Do you ever make it down to Missouri, to Kansas City? And do you have an opinion on who makes the best barbecue in Kansas City? Because there's Gates, is there Arthur Bryant? There's a few others too. Do you have an opinion?
Well, one of my favorites, you know, I haven't been down there in years, but when I used to go, one that opened up was called Q39. It's still there. I kind of like what he's doing down there. The wings are really good. I like his ribs and his burnt ends are pretty good down there. I've been to the Bryants and Gates, and those are fine establishments. They've been around a long time, and obviously they're still going. But, and there's probably some new ones down there that I'm missing because I've been down in Kansas City for a few years. So I'm probably missing some. Yeah. So I'm sure there's ones that go ahead.
Well, for me, some of the KC stuff is a little bit cumin forward. Does that make sense in the flavoring as opposed to other places, which might be just a little bit sweeter? Have I got that way wrong? Would you agree?
Well, what I have known in the past, like if you go to those Gates and the Bryants and stuff, they're kind of sweet forward, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. That's kind of that sweet sauce. Like we had a sauce at the old FD's that was called Sweet and Zesty, and that's kind of where that came from, was the Kansas City style. I think more people are moving towards kind of that sweet and heat over the years and a little bit more different ingredients there. I know my sauces are that way, that I take under my original sauce and make sauces out of it, whether it's Korean style or kind of a Chicago style where it's a little bit more kind of heat to it and a little not so thick, you know, and the molasses-y per se. So a little bit more kind of more of a glaze than that's not the main thing. You want to eat the meat. You're buying that beautiful pork, whether it's 100% Duroc or Berkshire or whatever. And I don't want to cover it up with a big old sticky sweet sauce. That's why I cook. That's how I smoke.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Minnesota
let the,
pork
let boards, the pork shine. So
there you go. Let the pork shine. Amen. Minnesota Pork Boards Promoter of the Year. That's got to be exciting for you.
Yeah, that was cool. That kind of came out of nowhere. They called me one day, Pam and the CEO from Jill. I think it's Jill. Hopefully I didn't get that wrong. I think she just became the CEO. Called me and kind of caught me off guard. And it's really cool because, you know, I've done stuff for them for years on promoting pork, whether it's little education, research, or just doing fun demos for, you know, backyard people or chefs, handling kind of their Midwest Pork Summit. I do a lot of that for them, get all these chefs together and handle, kind of put the whole pork summit together and things like that. So yeah, it was pretty neat. You know, my wife's like, what did you just win? She's like, what? You know, I'm like, well, it ain't a James Beard Award, but I'll take it, you know, so.
That's a big deal. Promoter yeah. of the year. That's awesome. But yeah, congratulations awesome. On that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So clearly you're an authority on barbecue. Actually, as a matter of fact, I've got a nice thick loin chop thawing on my counter right now that I can't wait to cook for my lunch. And what I usually do is sort of saute up some vegetables. I cut up some cabbage, some bell pepper, some onion, some garlic, and whatever else vegetable I've got, and kind of mm-hmm. fry that up a little bit, and then cook up a pork chop, you know, nice sear on either side, and then toss it in the oven for just 10 minutes, and I'm good to go. I've got a delicious, juicy, thick pork chop there to eat with my vegetables. Beyond barbecue, do you have preferred methods of preparing pork?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of known as in the barbecue world because I kind of shifted that. I was actually a pastry chef in Manhattan. I went to CIA in Hyde Park, New York. So I was a pastry chef first in my career and then put down the rolling pin and picked up a cleaver back in the late 80s and kind of got into that. But anyway, I digress. So, I mean, I love to... obviously grill. I love to, it's like, I use some big green eggs or something like that. I love to put cast iron on those things and sear mm-hmm. that and get a nice char, especially when you're talking pork chops. I love to get that beautiful sear because I want to change that texture. So I want a little bit of crunch on the outside and then that beautiful, juicy, rosy pink pork on the inside. So that's how there's people that sous vide and things, but I always like to get that last bit of char on the outside, whether it be in a saute pan inside, a cast iron pan outside, or just a straight up grill. I don't really care about grill marks per se. Mm-hmm. I just want that beautiful fat to kind of char up so I can eat that delicious stuff and that bone to be kind of, my mom used to, you know, she always still to this day eats that bone and all the way around and there ain't nothing left on that thing. She licks all the spices off the bone and everything still to this day. My grandfather, my grandfather was a butcher in Morse, Minnesota. So that's kind of where all this comes from. So
now I feel like one of the things that stood in the way of pork as a dish is a lot of times historically, or at least in my own home growing up, they would always come out kind of dry and overcooked. and people think, okay. Yeah. Pork, it's legit. It's pretty good and stuff. But, opinions have changed over the years to where maybe we're not quite as concerned with cooking it well done and serving it up that way. What can you talk to us about? What's the perfectly done pork chop is a little bit pink in the middle. Talk to us about that. Give us some details.
Well, I think what you hit it right. I mean, it's changed, but it still hasn't changed enough. Mm-hmm. I still will, like, even at my cabin or somewhere, cook a pork chop to perfect 145, nice and pink. And people are like, oh, it's pink. I can eat that. I'm like, yes, you can eat that. Trichinosis died back in the 60s. We're good. Right. We can do that, you know? So, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, people still too far. You know, they're not, the best thing you do is get a beautiful thermocouple. Don't have an eagle like you're pushing with your finger and, oh, it's perfect. Put the thermocouple in there, get it to 145. It's going to be perfect every time, but we still have a long way to go. There's people still out there that don't get that part, or they think every piece of pork is fatty, which it's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's obviously beautiful cuts from the back leg. Obviously when we're talking loin, tenderloin, that are heart healthy for you, in everything, but there's still a lot of work to do on that. But at National Pork Board and the Pork Checkoff, we're trying to Minnesota pork, whatever. That's what we're trying to push, and you're right. So,
and speaking of that fat, there was a long time when bacon was considered unhealthy, but that's actually healthy fat that's coming out of that bacon when you cook it up.
Well, yeah, the omega-3s, when you're talking about any kind of protein fat, it's about moderation. We're not telling you to eat 3 pounds of bacon every morning. Yeah, you might die if you do that. That's a little over the top, but I'm saying, we're not telling you to do that. We're not telling you to eat a whole freaking slab of pork belly every morning for breakfast, but moderation in anything, whether it's exercise and eating pork or whatever, mm-hmm. that's what we're trying to tell people. People look at me and they go, wow, you've been doing barbecue and you cook all that stuff for years, but you're thin. I'm like, well, I don't eat 20 pounds of it every day for breakfast and dinner, just like I don't eat, a bunch of beef every day. That's, that can cause issues too with cholesterol and gout and all that. So it's moderation,
Charlie,
mixing a vegetable once in a while. It's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there a website where you can get more?
From me?
Yes.
Go to charlieteesfoods.com.
Charlie Tees Foods.
Talk is brought to you by the Pork Checkoff, celebrating pork and the people who bring it to your table through
more
real
details
pork.
Are available at porkcheckoff.org.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio. Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, corn and beans higher, but wheat under some pressure today. Is that on news that they've taken some mines out of the Russian ports?
Yeah, I think it is, David. So, the wheat market has been really following that closely, all the activity. Last week was the talk that Russia was going to free up some Ukrainian grain exports, and then that fizzled over the weekend when they bombed the southern port facility. And now the news is that, they're demining the waters, like you said, and hey, we're going to have some exports coming out of Ukraine. The real likelihood is, even though they're chasing all these headlines, is it's going to take a while, even if they do get stuff freed up. So, but like I said, they're just chasing headlines. That's putting heavy pressure on the wheat market this morning. But boy, corn and soybeans going in the opposite direction, with the front end of the soybean market leading us higher. Trading almost 20 cents up in the July soybean contract. July corn futures more than 10 cents higher. Buyer interest in both of those markets here.
Well, looking over at the cattle, the fat cattle are higher. We've got some mixed trade in the feeders.
Yeah, some feeders, obviously, they're watching the corn market pretty closely. But we are starting to see some of those contracts firm up here with live cattle kind of leading us to the upside. We'll see. Cash trade is probably going to be steady, maybe steady weaker, but we are seeing corrective buying in the live cattle futures so far this morning. And then hog futures started out with a little bit of pressure, but now turned to a mixed tone here mid-morning. The premiums in the summer month contracts have really eroded with yesterday's price action.
That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now here on AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Davis Michelson here with you. Thanks again to Charlie Torgerson, chef and from Charlie T's Foods, and the Minnesota Pork Boards. Let's see. Let me make sure I get this right. Minnesota Pork Boards Promoter of the Year. Great conversation. I think maybe we should talk to him again sometime. I'm going to have to cook some lunch first, though. Made me hungry. Paul Niefer joins us now from Clifton Larson Allen. Mr. Niefer, thank you for joining us. I know you're busy.
That's okay. That's the story of my life.
That's good. Busy people are happy people, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm actually in Washington, D.C., meeting with some staff from the House Ag Committee and meeting with various other farm groups. So it's a very productive first couple days.
Is that something you can talk about? What's the hubbub out there in Washington right now?
Well, yeah, I think what I'm finding is the hubbub I'm finding is this new emergency relief program that FSA came out. You know, so for all the farmers that actually collected some type of crop insurance indemnity in either 2020 or 2021, and there's quite a few of those, they're going to get some additional assistance. But the key is there's a payment limit of $125,000 for corn, soybeans, wheat, et cetera. But if more than 75% of their AGI, their adjusted gross income, is from farming, then they're able to get an additional $125,000 payment limit, so they could receive $250,000. But as usual, the handbook dealing with this whole subject, the FSA handbook, is at best, I'm going to say, obtuse. It's very hard to understand, and we certainly have about three issues that we're trying to get resolved on that whole subject.
What can you give me that list? What are among those three issues?
Yeah. I was waiting for you to ask me that. So the first issue is that gains on selling farm equipment or trading in farm equipment, because now farmers have to report that as income. We only get to count those gains if their other farm AGI is greater than 2/3 of everything else. So, wow. You know, we have the 75, but then in order to count this, we got to drop over here. Well, that was applicable before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 came into existence. Now it's no longer applicable. So they really need to update or provide a frequently asked question on their website indicating that really equipment gains after 2017 should automatically be farm income unless perhaps, let's say, they don't buy any equipment. Well, that's not going to happen. So that's one. Secondly, we've heard from many state FSA offices at the state level, so that's fairly high up, that if the farmer has negative farm AGI, they can never qualify for this extra payment, even though 100% of their income is from farming. You know, they just had some depreciation or whatever, and that's why they have negative AGI. And then finally, we'd like to have them clarify that we could pretend like that the farmer filed a married filing separate return, because right now the farmer might have 100% of their income from farming, but the spouse, let's say they're a teacher in town, that's going to kick them out of the program. But under the other rules dealing with AGI, we get to pretend like they filed a married filing separate return, and that would fix the problem. So those are the three key main things that we're dealing with on this emergency relief program. And it puts us as CPAs in sort of an awkward situation, because some farmers, they know their 100% of their income's from farming, and they come to us, and this guidance really doesn't help us. And we're saying, well, we're not sure if we can sign off on this form, because it's the form FSA 510, which technically we as CPAs don't sign off on. We attach a letter that is the same thing. You know, the farmer says, well, if you're not going to sign it, I'm going to go to some other CPA that's going to assign it or an attorney or whatever. And that just puts us in a horrible situation.
Now, this new ERP program, I guess I'm a little bit confused. Is it the new WIP Plus? Is it the replacement for WIP Plus? What is this new program's relationship to the WIP?
It's really the replacement of the WIP Plus. Yeah, I think because they've really expanded it. You know, WIP Plus was what it was, the wildfires and hurricanes. Well, now this has been expanded. It's drought, it's derecho, it's excess moisture. So they've really expanded it. So really the WIP Plus program, in my opinion, has basically disappeared.
Okay. Now, are there timelines that farmers need to be aware of in relation to this ERP program and being able to take advantage of it?
Yes, they've probably almost all of them received the application. It went out about a week and a half ago, at least as far as I can tell with most of my farmer clients. They have until, my memory is, don't quote me this exactly, but I think it's July 22nd. Okay. It's toward the end of July to get that application back to FSA, and then they'll go ahead and issue the checks at that time.
And they can get more information and maybe check your math on that date at their local FSA office, correct?
Yeah, and also there's a website, you know, if they just, let's say, Google FSA ERP, it'll bring up the website. There's frequently asked questions there. And this is phase one. So phase one is strictly based on whether you receive crop insurance. Phase two then will be developed, and it will pay those farmers that had some type of disaster in 2020 and 2021 that wasn't covered by crop insurance. So those that'll be additional. And I think right now my understanding is hail insurance, they're not going to get any extra indemnity for that because hail was sort of a separate program. This is your typical crop insurance type situation, not hail insurance.
You mentioned 2020. Is that as far back as it goes retroactively?
Yes. Yes. On phase one. Phase one is strictly on 2020 and 2021.
Okay. Very good. Anything else that you want to make sure everybody knows about the ERP program before we move on?
I think I probably should get off of my high horse, but I want to make sure that we get this resolved as quickly as possible, again, because of that deadline coming up at the end of July sometime.
Absolutely. And we appreciate the information. We're glad to have it. I want to move on to something that you had written last month about the relationship between an interest rate increase and potentially lower land values. And one of the, you kind of did some rough math, did some, you know, napkin math here. Well, I'm sure it was much more than that. I don't mean to demean your mathematical processes, but you were taking a hypothetical case based on long-term rates going up by 250 basis points. It seems like maybe that didn't take a big enough bite there if we're at a 500 basis point increase. How might that change, and what might that mean for land values?
Well, and again, I'll sort of use my napkin math here, as you call it, let's say that a farmer is willing, or investor is willing, to get a 3% return on farmland. So they get $300, a 3% return is $10,000, you know, roughly. Okay. Now, let's say that interest rates go up by 500 basis points. So instead of wanting a 3% return, they want maybe an 8% return. You know, right now they're happy with 3%, but if interest rates go up 5%, that requirement, because they know they can go to a bank now and probably get a risk-free CD for 7 or 8%. You know, that's what happens when inflation and interest rates go up. So instead of being worth $10,000, now that $300, if we multiply it by 12 and a half times, if my math is right, that value, that land's going to drop from $10,000 down to $3,750. Mm. So that's the reality based on math. Now, farmers, especially if that quarter section or the 80 acres that's coming up that's next door to their house that they've coveted, let's say, for the last 30 years, you know, instead of wanting an 8% return, they might still be happy with, let's say, 5% return, which means the value might only go from 10,000 down to 8,000. So you can't simply just look at the math of interest rates, but we know that as interest rates really go up rapidly and go up high, that, you know, there's definitely going to be a potential decrease to land values.
Well, and this, as because it feels like it's sort of a relative situation, because as you pointed out in the article, that the KC Federal Reserve, for example, the average increase for values most of the states in that district between 20% and 25% year on year. Those are sizable increases.
Yes. Well, and certainly because I have some land in Iowa and Missouri, you know, my Iowa land that now, again, I bought it in the middle of a pandemic and probably got it at the lower end, but it's actually doubled in less than 2 years. So There certainly have been some, you know, high increases. And yeah, I think we're seeing maybe a leveling off, but I haven't really seen any major reductions in land values yet, right, in those areas.
There was, for a while there, a lot of concern. We talked to you a number of times on AgriTalk about potential policy, tax policy changes, 1031s, estate tax policy type stuff. Anything that's raising red flags to you on that front? It seems like it's gone a little quiet on that note.
Yeah, it's gone very quiet, but sometimes that's not a good thing. But I think, right, in this case, certainly by, let's say, first part of August, if nothing has happened, we know nothing's going to happen this year other than maybe an extender bill at the end of the year extending some of these provisions. We do hear there's some concern building about bonus depreciation, because starting next year, instead of 100% bonus depreciation for farmers, they're only going to have 80, and then the year after 60, 40, and 20, and so on. I think there's some push on that area to make that 100% permanent, at least through 2025. But other than that, nothing much going on.
Well, I guess for the time being, no news is good news. Hey, where can we hear your podcast?
You can hear it on Apple or Spotify, Apple Farm CPA podcast. Matter of fact, there was one just posted today. So we typically try to post that every Tuesday.
Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson, Allen the Farm CPA. Thanks for spending some time with us today. Keep up the good work out there in Washington, buddy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Tick-tock, tick-tock. I want to get right to it. The clock is a ticking. Senior Vice President of Real Estate Operations for Farmers National Company, Randy Dickhoot, has been good enough to join us today. Mr. Dickhoot, thanks for being on AgriTalk with us.
You bet.
Can you give me a general update? How's biz? What do sales look like right now? How's everything?
Well, the land market continues to be, firm to stronger. As you know, 2021 ended up with some historic up moves in values and activity. 2022, the amount of sales activity slowed to more normal, but those land prices continued to firm over that four first months of 2022. And now we're into the start of that early summer land auction season, and the sales we've had show good bidding, aggressive bidding, interested buyers from farmers and some investors, and prices are still in that firm to stronger area.
I've been looking through some of the blogs that you've written there on farmersnational.com, and you did highlight the seasonality from one middle of May, I believe it was. If I can ask you to think back perhaps to that writing, in that writing, you noted some shifts in seasonal sales trends. Can you talk about that a bit, please?
Yes, there have been over the last, decade probably, or maybe even less than that, that used to be, farm sold after harvest. And in that early winter, up to maybe March, that's usually when the land auctions and sales took place to be prepared for the next farming season. Well, now it's, that's still the predominant times to to sell and buy farms. But now farms can be sold any month of the year. And we're seeing more of those being sold. In fact, I talked to one of our sales managers today and says, picking up, you know, quite a few sales for that early August timeframe. But we also have them in April and May. And the key point is they can sell, but you have to honor the terms for the current lease and the tenant and sharing of rents and taxes. And all those terms can be worked out. But today, if somebody wants to sell in June, it can be done.
Has there been a demographic shift in who's making land purchases that has sort of flattened that seasonal roller coaster in sales? What's driving that?
I think, you know, farmers are still the predominant buyers of good cropland, and I don't see that changing. A few more individual investors. We've got a few more institutional investors for those states that allow it. But I don't know, you know, I think what's changing that is just the value of that land, the price you can get, and the sellers who are now more removed from the farm in some instances are not quite as aware of that seasonality, or they want to go ahead and get it sold now and not wait until November or December. So they're seeing it from their perspective, just get it sold and collect our revenue money from it and move on down the road after they inherit the farm.
Is there an attitude among buyers who have historically been savvy to the prior, more seasonal nature of the land market, who maybe consider this a buying opportunity? Well, you know, they're all out in the field planting, or you know, they're busy doing other things, and so maybe I can sneak in there and other farmers won't be there and there might not be as much competition. Is there a chance that there's anything to that? I'm just thinking off the top of my head now.
Yeah, maybe at one time, but today with the online auctions and simulcast auctions like we do, where they're online and in a public venue with an auctioneer crying it to the crowd, that's definitely less so, because I know of, you know, farmers who are on their tractor and they're bidding on their phone on an online auction, or investor driving down the road or whatever it might be. So today's technology has really probably fostered allowing that auction at any time.
Oh, that's interesting. On another subject, we just spoke with Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen about the relationship between land values and interest rates. And another blog that you had over there on farmersnational.com cited some research by Dr. Alan Featherstone from Kansas State, talking about real annual growth rates for farmland and the relationship to inflation over time. Can you talk about farmland as a good hedge against rising inflation?
Yes, I think, you know, it's an accepted knowledge, I guess you would call it, in mm-hmm. a lot of markets, that a real asset, you know, land, maybe other properties and stuff, real estate properties, are traditionally a good hedge on inflation. For various reasons. I'm not the economist. And so farmland definitely falls into that. And I think right now, with what's going on in the world with the war and the trade situations and post-COVID and supply chains and climate change and droughts and crop production and so forth, you know, look at agriculture and farmland is becoming more prevalent, and the realization that it is important. So not only being a real asset in a time of inflation, it's also a little more secure and counter-cyclical to other things. So I think the awareness of the public and investment public, you know, they see that, and that's part of that in buying interest in farmland today.
Mm-hmm. Well, quickly, before I let you go here, we're going to run out of time if I'm not careful. Land values in general, we've seen them shoot higher. There's an opinion there that we may level off here, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will pull back. Do you share that opinion?
Well, I think as long as the underlying supporting factors are still there, you know, we're on a, again, lower supply of land for sale right now. We've got good demand at this time. Underlying income, which has to be there to capitalize into the value, is still there, although challenged, of course, by the input costs. Inflation, it, you know, helps boost the value and the interest in buying. The headwind would be how far and how fast interest rates go, and if that overcomes the rest. But the unknown, you know, I think for the next number of months and maybe the end of the year, land values will be steady to firmer, definitely, somewhat stronger. But longer term, you know, we don't know what those unknowns are that might pop up and affect it.
Got to watch those unknowns, and I'll keep watching your blog for those. Randy Dickhoot, I appreciate it. Senior Vice President from Real Estate Operations. Come back this afternoon for more AgriTalk when I'll talk with Steve Nicholson from Rabo.